These primary symbols that we have felt it absolutely necessary to devote the introductory lectures of the series to the subject of the dot, the line, and the circle. It should ever be borne in mind that the veneration for symbols is not idolatry, for symbols are formulated to clarify truths which in their abstract form are incomprehensible. Idolatry consists in the inability of the mind to differentiate between the symbol and the abstract principle for which it stands. If this definition be accepted, it can be proved that there are very few truly idolatrous peoples. Philosophically, the literalist is always an idolater. He who worships the letter of the law bows down to wood and stone. But he who comprehends the spirit of the law is a true worshipper before the measureless altar of eternal nature upon which continually burns the spirit fire of the world. Tihi enitur opti absolute 23. The Vedic Trimurti. It is proper that the leader of universal should be regarded as the head of the world and that its three complexions should be symbolized by faces. Speaking its word of power, each face causes to issue from its mouth a sacred syllable, by which the surfaces of the three worlds are agitated and caused to assume the semblance of creation. Chapter 2. God, THEDI VINE FOUNDATION. From the preceding lecture it is evident that any description or definition of unknowable ultimates is possible only in the terms of negation. In other words, every definition so-called must be eliminative, and that which remains when all else is taken away must necessarily be the only thing incapable of removal. When considering the nature of primordial substance, the average school of philosophy postulates an active first cause, otherwise it is wholly at a loss to explain how creation can be the product of a passive power. Activity is accordingly postulated as a fundamental attribute of being. To me, however, it is inconceivable that the first cause, or more correctly, the causeless cause, should be either positive or negative. Rather, it seems more fitting to posit a permanent condition, which is neither positive in an active sense nor negative in a passive sense, but which is power in absolute suspension. For lack of a better defining term, we might conceive of eternal being as an enduring neitherness, partaking of neither the presence nor the absence of any tangible force or condition. The condition of the absolute can only be suggested by a suspended neitherness of both activity and inertia. To attempt an analysis of the fabric of even the ground work of space far exceeds the capacity of any human intellect. Never in the history of philosophy has there been evolved a mind capable of grasping all the multitudinous elements of being. The world is filled with people who foolishly try to teach or seek to be taught the length, breadth, and thickness of ultimates, when but a moment's true thinking would demonstrate the fallacy and futility of such effort. Since the ground work of space, the ultimate abstraction, transcends every 25 faculty and every dimension, it can never be comprehended by a reasoning organism that must necessarily arrive at its conclusions on the basis of faculty and dimension. For the human mind to understand that which is greater than itself is as impossible as for a mere man to swallow the ocean. The effort of the human mind to circumscribe the entirety of manifestation is comparable to a mollusk trying to enclose the sea within its shell. Realizing, therefore, how apropos is the ancient state meant that to define deity is to defile it, we are forced to accept the inevitable conclusion of the ages, namely, that the ultimates of beginning and end are alike unknowable. These conclusions are in harmony with the deductions of both Socrates and Buddha. The gods may be conceived of in either the singular or the plural sense, in the singular if we consider the deities as fractional parts of one creative agent, in the plural if we look upon the various parts as separate vehicles of cosmic intelligence. Thus in many ancient doctrines we have evidence of a funda. Mental monotheism manifesting through a complex polytheism. For example, the Elohim, or secondary gods of the ancient Jews, who, as the creative demiurge, moved upon the face of the deep and together constitute a single cosmic deity. In the same way, the elaborate pantheon of the Hindus is a mosaic of gods, who in combination form the nature of the supreme and all powerful Brahma. The gods may be considered as symbolic of the individual states of consciousness continually unfolding within the nature of absolute being. The concept of a single personal deity who was prudent enough to fashion himself without eyelids lest he fall asleep from that exhaustion which must necessarily result from an eternal vigil is hardly adequate to meet the evident needs of existence. Up to the present time, the advocates of monotheism have advanced no concept of deity adequate to control creation without the assistance of a privy council or celestial parliament. A few moments of serious consideration will reveal that a fundamental monotheism manifesting through an elaborate polytheism is by far the most noble concept of cosmic government, and is the basis of all the successful governments maintained by man upon earth. 26 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. God, THEDFORINEFUNDATION 27. The modern world is inclined to look askance at the elaborate pantheons of the Greeks, Egyptians, and Hindus, and rather prides itself that it has outgrown such theological crudities. Even now, however, there is a definite reversion to the pantheistic cults of antiquity, and when properly understood the Orphic theogony will enjoy a glorious renaissance. The subject of philosophic polytheism deserves further attention. Polytheism must not be considered synonymous with the blind adoration of an infinitude of imaginary superhuman beings, but rather as the recognition of a concatenated progression of evolving creatures, each influencing and to a certain degree controlling those inferior to itself, and in turn controlled by those superior to itself. The gods should not be considered as personally directing the destiny of individuals. Rather, they are vast centers of radiant force consciously or unconsciously influencing anything that exists or subsists upon their sphere of manifestation. For example, a city does not willfully mold the character of its inhabitants, nevertheless it is an active factor in determining the character of each individual unit of its population. This simile, while possibly not apparent at first thought, is particularly apt, for as cells exist in the human body, so man is but a cell in a larger organism which he pleases to term a god. The cells of the human body may feel a similar venera. Shin for man, who in the light of cell intelligence must be a boundless and infinitely powerful deity. Polytheism therefore may be best defined as a veneration for causal agencies. Obedience to the will of the gods was regarded as the basis of human happiness and simply meant that only those who lived in harmony with natural law could hope for a tranquil existence. To the ancients it seemed essential that intelligence should manifest from an intelligent creator, in other words, the manifesting thought proved the existence of the unmanifested thinker. Intelligence exists in every department of creation. The entire universe is controlled by definite laws that evidence the omniscience of the eternal thinker. From the fountainhead of immeasurable mind the cogitations of deity stream forth to make fertile with thought the whole. 28 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. Area of Being. Broken up by creations as upon a prism, the mind light of deity becomes manifest as an infinite order of separate and specialized intelligences. Thus upon the surface of the sea of universal mind appear numberless foci, each con trolling a definite phase of cosmic activity. The gods are such foci, so are men, but to a more limited degree. The sum of all these individual minds is the one universal mind, so that in the last analysis gods, men, and worlds are each fragments of the whole. The philosophers of all ages have realized that the achievement of perfect wisdom lies in the elevation of the power of comprehension to that state where it is able to grasp the relation of die parts of existence to the sum of existence, which the Buddhists designate the self. All great systems of religious philosophy agree that anterior to the gods is the one and undivided, who is the very foundation of manifested existence or the first limitation of absolute being, and who may properly be designated the father of gods and men. We shall now turn our attention to a consideration of the powers and attributes of this first of all mortals. The chief of those who die, the firstborn of absolute self. In 72 languages men call this first power God, the first and most perfect of creations, the eldest of the old, and the most ancient of the most ancient. God is best defined as the first manifestation of infinite existence, the limitation of limitlessness. In his adoration of deity, man is prone to consider God as synonymous with all, in that God is synonymous with all that man can hope to comprehend. But behind comprehension is that which is incomprehensible, the thrice black darkness, which exists unhonored and unsung through the unmeasured duration of eternity, and upon whose placid surface time comes and goes, and beginnings and ends are but incidental. To return to the symbolism of the preceding lecture, God is the dot, the first island floating in and upon the permanent depths of unlimited existence. God is therefore capable of definition in the terms of the dervish, by whom as chief of beings he is denominated the axis of the world, or that immovable center about which all revolves.